We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast here for a Saturday Q&A, like we always do on Saturday morning. So excited to dive into some questions. We do have some Patreon questions to start with today for, the first time in a little bit. So we'll dive into those first, and then we'll kind of, open it up to the chat as we always do. First and foremost, Steven Gillard, new member. Welcome. Thanks for joining in. And this is officially the last hour in which you can go enter our Isaiah Spiller jersey giveaway. So after this is over, we'll be announcing that winner. So go join that up if you haven't yet. That being said, joining me today are my guys, Tyler and Alex. Tyler, we'll start with you, man. How are you doing? And are you all packed and ready for Hawaii?
I'm doing very well. I'm not even close to packed for Hawaii. That said, I only need about four things, so I'll be pretty good to go pretty soon.
Yeah, a couple of swimsuits, a couple of t-shirts, and you're all good. A couple of travel things, and you're all set. Whereabouts in Hawaii are you going?
We'll be flying into Kona on the Big Island, and then we'll just be take a rental car, kind of travel around there. So, she's been to Maui, I've been to Kauai. We both have not been to the Big Island together, so we're going there.
Very cool. I'm very jealous. I love Hawaii. My grandpa was stationed in Pearl Harbor back in the day. Nice. Ended up buying a house. So when I was a kid, we used to go out and visit him, a few times every couple of years to Hawaii. So love that place. I mean, who doesn't love Hawaii? It's hard not to love. Alex is here as well. Alex isn't in Hawaii, but he is in the Caribbean. Alex, what's up, man? How you doing?
Tired, studying from finals, sleep deprived. However, you asked who doesn't like Hawaii, and I've never been to Hawaii, but isn't the flight to Hawaii like really long?
I mean, no, from it's California, like, it's like a 4 hours.
4 hours.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the difference. Because from where I am on the East Coast, it's like a 12, 13-hour flight or something. Sure. Not doing that. I'm just going to go to Cabo instead. So, maybe from California.
Wouldn't Cabo just be like different. 8 hours? 9 hours?
All right. The point is, I like Mexico better. And so, I'm just going to stick to that. But no, I've never been to Hawaii. I hope Tyler has fun, and I'm ready to get this show on the road.
Yeah, Mexico has some great spots as well. Obviously, I served my LDS church mission there, so I'm a little biased to Mexico as well. But fun place to go. Where I served my mission was not a fun place to travel to, but loved it nonetheless. All right, so for those who missed the jersey giveaway, the details are on Twitter. Essentially, you have to retweet the pinned tweet there and then either support and sign up for sign up and support the show on Patreon or the YouTube membership option. And then there's a certain post on there that you just have to comment a certain phrase. So it's very easy. We just did this kind of as a way to reward those who support the show on Patreon, on YouTube in that fashion. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll do some other Twitter giveaways, YouTube giveaways, and things like that for the general crowd. All right, that being said, we'll jump into our first question from Patreon. The Coors Cowboy wants to know if we think special teams play a large contributing factor for snap counts / roster building. In this case, the fullback room specifically is how he wants to know if special teams could give an edge to Neighbors or to Xander Horvath.
I think it could, and in the end of the day, it should. With that said, Neighbors, if he does anything, it's be a half-decent special teamer. So I don't think they would grab Horvath just to replace Neighbors on special teams. To me, it's just who's the better fullback. I think that just contributes more, which sounds like an easy answer. But to answer your question, I obviously one of them has to be good at special teams. If Horvath is awful for whatever reason or is not picking it up, then sure, maybe Neighbors takes that spot. But to me, it's really not like that's not really the point of taking Horvath. To me, it's just to get him more involved on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think special teams could determine a few roster spots. Like if we're debating between Dean Leonard and Keymon Hall to be CB6 at some point, like if that's where we find ourselves, then you can differentiate and be like, oh, well, this guy's sure better on special teams. I mean, everyone remembers what happened with the wide receivers last year with special teams value. So, you know, it can differentiate some positions, but I just don't think they would have taken Horvath at all if they were seriously considering keeping Gabe Neighbors on the active roster.
Yeah, I think specifically in terms of the fullback, like I think they are trying to get back to like what they had with Derek Watt, who was a great special teams player and kind of a good fullback option for them. I think that's kind of like the baseline for what they want right now, is at minimum a legitimately good special teams core player. And, you know, Seaman Anderson certainly improved in that regard. But if you're taking, you know, Xander Horvath at his best and his elite RAS score, and ideally kind of morphing that into, you know, Derek Watt 2.0, I think that's kind of the goal. I think we know at this point that Gabe Neighbors is not a good special teams player. So I think in that specific position, it will help Horvath if he's able to kind of hit the ground running on special teams, because he probably is going to be a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of blocking, in terms of receiving, and those kind of concepts. You know, he's never really lined up as an H-back tight end kind of role before. So offensively, Horvath could have a little bit of a learning curve, but if he's able to, you know, hit the ground running as a special teamer, then I think that absolutely will help him make the roster.
Yeah, I just don't see any way that Neighbors makes this, but good question. A lot of fullback stuff.
Now everybody loves the fullback. I see a couple questions in here in the chat. You know, Tyreek talking about the Peter King power rankings, which is definitely that was an article, not a video, by the way, Tyler. And Nate has a question about Staley familiarity, but we'll get to some of these other Patreon questions first. Justin Reyes wants to know, why do you think the Chargers chose not to address the right tackle in the offseason? Is it confidence in the improvements Norton / Pipkins have made? Or is it the safety net of having Filer as an option? That being said, who do you think is the game one starter at right tackle? Alex, you want to take that one first?
I think it's the safety net of having Filer as an option if they really need to. Obviously, you sort of hope Trey Pipkins does develop, right? You know, as much as Tom Telesco was like, oh, you know, we're bullish on Trey Pipkins and all that. That was last offseason. I do legitimately think they are hoping for that, but in the event that it doesn't work out and it becomes apparent that it didn't work out, you can fall back on Filer at right tackle as opposed to, you know, giving out another contract. But you know, it's still early. I don't want to say early in the game, but there are quite a few right tackle options still available if at some point, you know, through training camp they just realize, okay, this isn't working and we need to do something else. They can always fall back on that as well, right? It doesn't seem like Darrell Williams hasn't signed anywhere, right?
No.
And Riley Reif has not signed anywhere. So, I mean, there are still options if later on the offseason they decide to change course.
I would love for that to be the case. And I think, I guess it could. But to me, I hope they're not, no offense to them, dumb enough to go all through training camp and go, these guys that were terrible tackles for basically their careers are still terrible tackles. Oh, shit, it didn't work out. Let's go get another one. Now, that's where the Filer thing comes in. I think that's more their fallback than a free agent. But I don't know, man. I really just think they're going to rock with the guys they have. Now, why didn't they address right tackle? I don't know. I think Staley does defer. Outside of the defensive side of the football, I think he does defer to his coordinators, to the position coaches. So I think that he might have wanted Hymus out there, but you know, they're like, hey, let's put in Kelemete or whatever. You know, special teams, he clearly, you know, it diverted to Swinton in that regard. So I think in this case, if Nugent came in and said, hey, I'm gonna make these two right tackles work, Staley's gonna go, okay, I believe you. That's your side of the football, you know, that's your expertise. We're gonna rock with that. So I really think it's one of these right tackles. I think one of these guys is going to be the starter. I think Filer as a backup is cool. But to me, it's just like he's just answering that question and saying it that way for the media members. But really, I think they really just want one of these two tackles that they have.
Yeah, I mean, from a roster building standpoint, like, it, you know, financially, it would be the best case scenario for them if one of these tackles making $900,000 hit and became a good serviceable right tackle. You know, I've kind of said from the beginning, I feel like if they viewed Storm Norton as somebody that was really a good starter, they would have paid him as such instead of just bringing him back on the tender free agent option. So I would lean towards it being Pipkins or Filer at this point personally. And I think, you know, there's an argument to be made, of course, that, you know, Matt Filer would be the better option. I think the best option for the Chargers, I've said this before, is to get the five best players out there. And for me, that would involve kicking Matt Filer to right tackle. Now, it's early. It's, you know, OTAs. There have not been any pictures of Matt Filer working at right tackle yet. It's all at left guard. And the right tackles have always been Norton and Pipkins. Again, early OTAs, of course. But it does seem like they're just going to try and figure out who of those two players is the better option. And frankly, I think they're the same player, like literally the exact same player. And, you know, they'll have some good moments against, you know, poor competition like Pipkins did against the Broncos when everybody was out. I mean, Norton had some good moments throughout the season. I think, like, you look at his game against the Eagles as a good game, but Brandon Graham wasn't playing in that game. And, you know, they didn't exactly have any great other pass rushers opposite of, you know, playing opposite of Storm Norton. So, and then they'll also have those games against Max Crosby, Micah Parsons, insert elite pass rusher here, where it's going to snowball and they're going to end up giving up 10 pressures a game and in those situations. So there's a lot of people out there who are like, Trey Pipkins is better than Storm Norton. They are the same player. They are the exact same player in terms of production. So this is, frankly, in a really annoying situation that they've put themselves in. But I think that they want to give these guys a chance for whatever reason and see if Brendan Nugent and Sean Surratt can turn them into quality players. I just have my doubts.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like they are what they are. I don't see how Pipkins he could be better. Norton was dead last in almost every category. So you could get 45 out of 52 this year. But like you said, they're basically the same at this point.
I mean, if you took Norton's three worst games and just made them average games, then you're not talking about the worst production. You're talking about, like, you know, 42nd, like Tyler's saying. So it's like, really, how much of an upgrade are you getting with Trey Pipkins? Whereas if you put Matt Filer out there, we've seen him have legitimately good NFL offensive tackle tape and production. You know, in his full season starting as right tackle, he allowed 25 total pressures, and his pass blocking efficiency rating was nearly the same as it was this past season at left guard. And those numbers put him middle of the pack, which is what the Chargers need. They need a middle of the pack right tackle, and they have one in Matt Filer.
I feel like there's every other option they could do makes more sense than what they're going to do.
I know.
I could be wrong. You know, again, it's positivity season. So everyone will tell us, you know, be more positive and, you know, these guys will make it work. But like, yeah. I don't know. We've just seen this song and dance before. Right. Like, if they're not a good tackle, they're not a good tackle. I rarely see someone who's not a good tackle, in fact, be a bad tackle, also be like, oh, I'm a very good tackle now, or even average. I guess we can hope for average.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the point. But still, like you said, get the best five guys out there. I don't think I've seen a Chargers staff take an average-ish tackle and make them, you know, have a real career year since, like, King Dunlap, probably from the Eagles, when he was just kind of like a extra guy for them. And then they jumped up and became a starting left tackle. Right. But even that was short-lived. So it's just, I don't know. We'll see what they end up doing. You know, Jamari, you know, was playing left tackle all year, switched to right guard in the championship game, gave up like one pressure just because he felt like it. You know, like, to me, I would aim for something like Zion, Lindsley, Salyer, and Filer, but they're going to go with one of these guys. They think they can help them. To me, I think that also, talking about the tight ends later, kind of limits what McKitty can do, because now instead of having him be your H-back type, you're probably just having him as more of an inline type, or somebody that just helps out the right tackle over and over and over again. And so now it's like, okay, well, now we're limiting what McKitty can do. Maybe he's not much of a receiving threat this year. Now we're kind of stuck having to help out Pipkins or Norton or whatever. I don't know. It just does not feel like the best way to maximize your roster.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really good about their group of interior players being solidified, right? Like, if anything happens to Filer or Zion, like, I feel good about having Salyer and Jimenez as those depth options, and Will Clapp certainly as well. So they've improved the offensive line. The offensive line will be better just because I think Zion is an upgrade at right guard, even over Ode Abougie. I've said that. And then you have better depth behind them. But at right tackle, it's like, you don't have to settle for this. Like, you don't have to settle for 42nd out of 45th being an upgrade. So, I mean, I wish they would have been able to bring in, you know, Dennis Kelly, David Questenberry, someone to at least provide like legitimate competition, because right now it's just like, you're having competition, but really, like, what's the point?
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yep.
Okay, so we have one more Patreon question from Brady Wooten. He wants to know what we think the snap count share will look like from the tight end room. Of course, the Chargers signing Gerald Everett to take the place of Jared Cook. You have Donald Parham presumably taking another step forward. You have Trey McKitty presumably taking another step forward. Do we see a fourth tight end maybe working in there? What do you guys think here?
I definitely think it's possible. Steven Anderson playing, let's see, like, it depends on the week. Obviously, when Parham got hurt, he jumped up more, but generally around 20 to 30% of the snaps. Again, if McKitty is the inline tight end, he's going to stick there. It's not an H-back type. Like, they might have to carry another H-back sort of type. That's another spot for Campboy or Krummenhuck or whatever. Jared Cook, like 50, 60% of the snaps. I assume that's just Gerald Everett's role. He just slides right in to that Jared Cook role. That doesn't really change. Donna Parham, about 40 to 50% of the snaps. That probably doesn't really change. It really becomes interesting to me when you get down to that inline tight end H-back type, and they don't really have that. We have to assume that McKitty could be that. We have to assume that Horvath could be that, and I think that's what they drafted him for. We don't really know that yet. So I think whoever wins that third tight end, or excuse me, that H-back sort of spot will get more snaps than the fourth tight end, but I don't know. We'll see. I don't know what plans they have for McKitty.
Yeah, I don't know what plans they have for McKitty. I would probably say if we're just sliding Everett into Cook's role, I actually think he'll probably increase in snap percentage over Cook just because of his competency as a blocker versus, I mean, that was a big problem for Jared Cook the last couple of years in particular. Donald Parham probably maintains 40 to 50%. It really depends on if they keep a fourth one, because if they don't, then, you know, McKitty's going to be on the field a lot. If they do, you know, also, you know, do you think that player is as reliable as a Steven Anderson type to the point where you would want them active on game day, or are they kind of like a healthy scratch kind of like player just in case? I think for the time being, until we see more from Campmoyer or more from Krummenhawk, that they end up keeping three Kind of would have liked to have seen them resign Steven Anderson, especially for what the value of that contract was. But at this point, I think they probably are stuck with three tight ends.
Yeah, I think they'll keep the three tight ends and the fullback in Horvath. And I think you'll have Horvath be, you know, more active. I don't think he's going to, like, he's not going to step fully into Steven Anderson's role. I think that would be, you know, a little egregious, if you will. I think McKitty kind of takes on the lion's share of that role. So I think we see Horvath probably get, you know, 10 snaps maximum a game on offense, and then the rest of it just be kind of special teams this year. You know, hand the ball off to him, you know, from time to time, and use him as a pass catcher from time to time. But I don't think they're going to come in and give Xander Horvath, you know, 25 snaps a game, because I think there is going to be that learning curve. But I think Trey McKitty can certainly handle that. He did a lot of that at Florida State. He did a lot of that at Georgia, a lot of that H-back hybrid stuff. So McKitty's used to it, and he looks good, man. He looks like he's added, you know, 5-10 pounds of muscle or whatever. I don't know, but he looks like he's taken a good step forward in his personal development, and, you know, that's to be expected. He was coming off an injury last year, so having a full offseason, I think, will be good for him.
Yeah, there's one, but like, so offensive line, if we had Smith, I'd feel better about whatever they're doing at right tackle, but they don't, so I don't feel so great. This group, whatever they decide to do with the tight end group, I'm all for. Tight end, fullback group, run game coordinator, whatever. Kevin Coger, I full faith in what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Coger, I hope everybody enjoys the final year of having Kevin Coger on staff, because he probably get an offensive coordinator job next year after getting two interviews this year to you know, take that step up. So really excited about this group. This group is so young, so athletic. I think all three of them can really give you a boost in their specific roles. So I'm really excited to see what year two under Kevin Coger holds for this group. All right, well, we mentioned it earlier. We'll talk about Tyreek McKeithen, I'm going to guess McKeithen. Apologies if I pronounced that wrong, of course. But he wants to know our thoughts on Peter King having the Chargers number two in his power rankings article. This came out last Monday for Peter King. He always does Monday morning quarterback, or right now that's football morning in America or something like that. I can't remember the exact title anymore. Anyway, Peter King for NBC had the Chargers at number two in his power rankings. He loves what the Chargers have done in the offseason, believes that they have improved the most out of any team. And I think he just really believes in Justin Herbert. So, Alex, what do you make of Peter King having the Chargers number two? I think for what it's worth, the Chiefs were right behind them at number three. I want to say the Broncos were number nine and the Raiders were like number 10 or 11. So what do you think, Alex?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'd love to put the Chargers number two. And if we're talking about projecting this out to where they could be by the end of the season, I don't think them being number two is impossible. But just looking at this Peter King list that we have, I mean, what part of the Chargers roster is as complete as the Rams? Like, and the Rams just are coming off of the Super Bowl. I don't think they got worse outside of losing Von Miller.
I think the Rams got worse.
I mean, I think they're worse, but significant enough worse for the Chargers to jump them at this point. I think that's a little too early to say, especially considering just their offensive structure. And they do still have enough on defense. You have Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. I think that's kind of all you need. It's a little too early for me for the Chargers to be at two. I think they can, there's an argument for them to definitely be top five. You know, just looking at this Peter King list, right? So Buffalo is number one. You have Chiefs, Rams, then Packers, 3, 4, 5. I think where I would probably put the Chargers is like around the 6 or 7 range, somewhere around like Tampa Bay, Cincinnati at this point. That's kind of where I would put the Chargers. But I think it's a little too early for number two dog.
Yeah, I guess if we're talking about roster, sure, I could see that. But to me, they have to earn this. You can go ahead and put them at number two or even number one if they come out of the gate and they beat the Raiders and the Chiefs, let's say. Even that is a little early, but at least you've seen this team beat two, you know, I think probably two top 10 teams in here, certainly the third team. I just think they have to earn it. even if the roster you could argue is top two, I just don't, they have to earn it. And I think the Rams deserve, even though they got worse, I think they deserve to be ahead of the Chargers. I think I could see the Chargers being ahead of the Chiefs, to be completely honest, because the Chargers do contend with the Chiefs pretty well. And I think the roster is much better and the Chiefs got worse. But still, like Green Bay, Tampa Bay, you know, I think the Chargers at fifth or so makes sense to me. I'm definitely not putting them behind the Bengals. Baltimore is interesting. We got the Eagles here at number nine. It's very interesting. I don't know.
The Niners at 10. Interesting.
It's probably the quarterback situation. Debo. I guess he's assuming Debo is up in the air still. Yeah.
I meant that being high.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean,
they're going to take a big step back at quarterback.
Are they?
Jimmy G might still be the quarterback.
Trey Lance is going to struggle, man. Trey Lance, he's going to be an effective runner, but I mean, he didn't have a junior season at North Dakota State. Like, he's going to struggle as a passer.
I don't know if he's going to play this year. That's kind of my thing.
They can't keep Jimmy and his $25 million price tag, man. They got to cut him or trade him.
That's what we've been saying for the last couple months, though. I mean, even going into last offseason, that was a thing. 16.
I mean, I think there's a few issues here.
Right.
You know, Peter, like, for me, like, if you're going to do offseason power rankings, like, I feel like you have to have the two teams that played in the Super Bowl as one and two. Like, I just think that's kind of how I view things. And I think having the Chargers at number two is cool. Like, I think he's really high on what the Chargers have done, and I am as well. But I think you've got to have some kind of mix of what happened last year and what the teams have done. And like the Bengals at seven, I mean, as much as I would love to just shit on the Bengals as much as possible, but you know, they're a good team. They made it to the Super Bowl, and then they improved their offensive line, which is really their biggest weakness. So I think in May, when you're doing power rankings, I just feel like you've got to have the Super Bowl teams at least in the top five. And, you know, I think the Chargers probably should be in the 5, 6, 7 range. Like Tyler, I feel like they kind of have to earn being number two, as opposed to just having a good amount of hype and being in the top 5 or 7 or 8. And I also think the Ravens are too low, but that's just me.
I will say about the Bengals, like, I do think I get why you would put them at 2 or in the top 5 as a result of winning the Super Bowl, but like, they did sort of get lucky in the AFC.
100%.
Like, 100%. Yeah, like, they really, I mean, the Titans blew that game. Ryan Tannehill just, I don't understand. I still don't understand what happened there. And the Chiefs blew that big lead that they had. So, like, in a sense, I could see Cincinnati roster-wise, even though they did upgrade their offensive line, why they would be at 7. You know, and again, like, the whole playoffs, as opposed to, like, the NBA playoffs, is just one game simulation, and, you know, whoever wins, wins, right? It's sudden death, so do you really figure out who's the better team from that? You know, I still wouldn't say the Bengals are better than the Chiefs, even though they won that game. I kind of generally agree with this top 10. Like, I just think with the Chargers, it's also, like, we have to see the improvements they've made, right? Like, you can put them at number two, you know, after they win the first 2-3 games, or number two by the end of the season. But it's also like, okay, they've added all these pieces on the defensive line, but we still have to see the run defense get better, right? I mean, Every national commentator, like, the first thing they say about the Chargers is Herbert, bad run defense last year, right? So, I mean, you know, I think you just kind of have to see how that plays out first. I do think it'll be better. I just think it's a little too early for them to be two.
Yeah, and someone pointed this out about the Rams. I mean, they lost Andrew Whitworth too, so their offensive line is going to be significantly worse. They lost Austin Corbett. So I think the Rams will take a step back, but I still think that they'll be very much in the mix. I mean, the NFC is a shit show after the top four, so they'll make the playoffs, probably win a playoff game, but I don't think they have a good chance of repeating in with this kind of, you know, makeshift at offensive line and what they've lost in Von Miller, because Von Miller had like 20 pressures and 5 sacks in the playoff run for them, and Leonard Floyd is not that.
That's true.
No Von Miller, no Sebastian Joseph Day, no OBJ, which At Whitworth, no Woods.
Bunch of people talking about Ode Abuji. I don't think he's coming back. I think we can confidently say that he is going to be moving on unless something happens. Like if somebody gets injured, then sure. But I think he made it pretty clear that after they drafted Zion that he was probably not going to come back. And he thinks that he should be a starter, and I agree with him. And I don't think he should sign with the team unless he has a good chance at starting. So, you know, theoretically, could he start over Jamari Salyer if they kick Filer to right tackle? Sure. But I think the Chargers need to be able to have some time to kind of sort that situation out. And then Ode, of course, has to get healthy.
Right. That's the thing. Even if he comes back, I know his whole video was on the road to recovery to be able to play week one. I don't know if the Chargers can wait around and, you know, wait for him to just be ready for week one at this point. Brad is very high, apparently. Brad, enjoy your Saturday 9:30 in the morning high.
Already?
You know, do what you got to do.
I guess he could be on the East Coast. So.
Good old 12:30 high.
Wake and bake.
Envy Talent had this comment, Mike Davis, CB4. This is a really interesting comment. If you listen to Daniel Popper on Chargers Weekly, he kind of seems to think that Davis is the fourth corner and that Callahan would be the third corner, which would allow them, of course, to keep Asante on the outside.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
He also thinks that they're going to cut Jerry Tillery. So I don't know. Like, this is the Chargers weekly appearance was a little much for me from Daniel Popper this week.
Like, I also don't know if the numbers matter as much in the cornerback room with how they're going to be deployed. Like,
sure,
Michael Davis is still going to be on the field a lot, right? Like, same with Bryce Callahan, same with Asante Samuel. So, like, yeah, you can make a difference between who's CB2s, who's CB3, who's CB4. But really, those four guys are going to play a lot with how Staley uses his defensive back. So I kind of think it doesn't matter. I agree with what Popper was saying before the draft, is that, like, Michael Davis stocked down, right? Which is why he kind of, like, had them taking Trent McDuffie, I think, in one of his last mocks. But I just, yeah, I don't really think Michael Davis being CB4 or, you know, where you would put him on the depth chart matters with how much he's going to be playing. And I don't really view Jerry Tillery as a cut candidate either. I mean, they need another interior defensive line pass rusher. And if you cut him, you're relying on Morgan Fox and then probably someone you're getting on, like, the waiver wire or someone's, you know, a la Eric Banks from last season. So I don't think the Chargers are willing to do that. I don't think there's much financial incentive to cut Jerry Tillery. I think they're just keeping him this year and letting him walk.
Yeah, the Jerry Tillery cut candidate, trade candidate thing, I don't see that. You got Morgan Fox. We're just even assuming that Jerry Tillery is not the starter. Like, he legitimately just could be the starter.
He could be.
So I don't think him going from that to, like, cut candidate, unless he really is throwing some sort of hissy fit or something. If there's something internally, then sure. Otherwise, there's no real trait. Like, who wants Jerry Tillery? You know, it's not that simple. You get a seventh for him.
Yeah.
Cool. Take a ninth round pick.
Yeah, exactly. You're just, like, undrafted free agent pick or something like that. Like, you just
give me a priority waiver signing after the draft.
priority UDFA signing.
Yeah. Move up in the waiver wire spot or something. But no, like, And then, you know, cutting him doesn't really save them a whole lot of money. You have to bring in someone else anyway. Otito Agbonia, yeah. like, he's a fifth round pick. I don't see them relying on him so much to be, you know, a legit pass rush threat right now. As far as Michael Davis goes, I'm going to say that I think he's going to be the outside CB2. I think Asante Samba Jr. is going to play in the slot. That's just how I see it. I think he's going to start on the outside. Unless he gets hurt, which, you know,
yeah,
which is very possible.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to start on the outside.
Really? Because a couple of people are talking about trading Michael Davis or cutting Michael Davis. They can't cut Michael Davis. If they cut Michael Davis, they have a $9 million dead cap hit this year, and his cap hit is 9.375. So financially, that makes absolutely zero sense to cut him. If they trade him, they can save $5 million. But again, who's trading for Michael Davis in this scenario? And how much are you, like, is trading him for a six round pick worth saving $4 million? Like, I don't think that is the case. I think Michael Davis is a quality depth corner, and I think that's fine. Like, is he probably a little overpaid at this point? Yeah. But, you know, I think you keep him, you have him as, if Tyler thinks he's the CB2, then you keep him as the CB2. I think he's the CB3 just from a physical profile standpoint. It gives you a little bit more diversity to have Asante, JC Jackson, and Michael Davis out there. But trading him, it's not worth the return unless you're getting like a third round pick, which that's not happening because he just had a bad season. So I was just gonna say
I like how we talk about our quarterbacks being like, oh, all of our quarterbacks got hurt last year and we were putting Tavon Campbell and Justin Jefferson. Also, let's trade away our depth.
Like, yeah.
Well, you know, that to me that just doesn't make any sense.
No, you're the most you're getting for Michael Davis at this point is like a six-round pick because he had a really bad season last year. He has no trade value at this moment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you have to take into consideration the contract. You're taking on a big contract. So relatively big contract, at least. So trade value is essentially nothing right now. So I think you keep Michael Davis. You have a good, deep rotation at corner, and you can kind of keep your options if everybody's healthy, of course. If anybody gets injured, then you have Michael Davis, who's been a reliable CB2 in the past, who's taking games against Stephon Diggs and Darren Waller and all that stuff. And he's not cheeks. Like, he has some struggles. He was a former undrafted free agent. We need to change our expectations. It's the same thing with Sam Tevi. It's like you take these players who are late round picks or undrafted free agents, and your expectations need to change for how you look at them. Yeah. And if you're talking about Michael Davis, he was really good in 2020. The scheme change was not super favorable for him last year, which is why they went out and got JC Jackson. So he's not cheeks. You're talking about somebody who's a quality CB2, CB3. That's not cheeks or being an awful player.
Can someone make audio clip outs of Steven saying cheeks repeatedly? Thank you. Okay.
Cheeks.
Cheeks. Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, at this point, the other thing with Michael Davis is I just don't. Yeah, he was really good in 2020. Like, I think people forget like how good he was. And how good he still can be. I'm not saying he's going to have like a breakout season or anything, but you know, if you have like one game where, I don't know, you're playing the Bengals or playing the Chiefs, you know, can he go one-on-one with somebody from those teams and do fairly well when they don't have him covering Byron Pringle, weirdly? Yeah, they can. So I think that he's still really valuable to this team. I know he had a bad year last year, but I think people, like Steven said, are just kind of going overboard.
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to try to bring up my good old presentation here. I did this a while ago in a different mailbag, but look, Michael Davis, like, first five games of the season, 33 yards a game, playing in the box, covering tight ends, 50% completion rate his way, plays really well. It's just everything after that, that game getting benched, a hamstring injury in week 8, and after that a hamstring injury, everything pops up, right? Week 9, whatever, 11 to 15, he finally comes back, 50 yards a game, 4 touchdowns allowed. If he's healthy, I really think he's the CB2. I think he legitimately can and should be the other outside CB2, which isn't a knock on Asante Samuel Jr. I just think him being in the slot would be awesome.
You know, I think the other thing is people have to remember we play in the AFC West as well, right? And Michael Davis, one of the things he's been very good at is covering Travis Kelce and Darren Waller, like when he's been asked to. Like, he's been pretty good at that, especially with Darren Waller. So for me, like I just think you're making yourself thinner by cutting him, and you're not getting enough value to make that make sense.
Yeah, final thing about Michael Davis, as Ross points out, you know, Brandon Staley said, you know, when you're in a Gus Bradley cover three system, you're doing the same thing every single play. Mm-hmm. You are, you know, dropping into cover three with some man principles. Occasionally you're going to shadow Stephon Diggs or whatever the case may be, match up with a tight end. But for probably 80% of the snaps on any given Sunday, you're doing the exact same thing. You have one responsibility. And you come into a Brandon Staley scheme where maybe on this play you're kind of dropping a little bit and playing a little bit of cover two sync, where you're kind of asked to do more tackling, or maybe certain times you're dropping into cover four or matching up with Darren Waller, matching up with Travis Kelce. You have so many more responsibilities in this scheme, which is a good thing, but it takes time. And, you know, I still think that Michael Davis has a good amount of upside if he can kind of rekindle his 2020 form and improve and be more comfortable in the scheme. As every player has kind of said, you know, we've heard from Asante and Drew and Derwin about they're hitting the ground running this year, as opposed to, okay, like, what does this mean? What are my responsibilities here? You know, how are you kind of wording this? And all the players have kind of said that, you know, switching defensive schemes or offensive scheme is like learning a new language. And as someone who's learned a second language, it's very, very difficult. And mm-hmm. So I think you're talking about all of these players being more comfortable, improving in the scheme, and just being able to focus this year on their development and techniques, as opposed to learning a foreign language and learning a new scheme.
Absolutely. Arjun bringing in Stranger Things season 4. Really relevant, Arjun. Thank you for contributing.
Hey, man, Stranger Things is fantastic. I actually do want to mention this because, you know, Arjun's been tweeting about it. So Brooke and I went back and watched Stranger Things 3 because it came out in 2019. It's been 3 freaking years. And season 3 of Stranger Things is elite television. And I can understand people who don't like Stranger Things because the first season you're watching a bunch of little kids. Mm-hmm. But season 3 of Stranger Things is elite television. I have not started season 4 yet. Brooke had to work prom last night, so we're waiting to watch it together, obviously. So we'll start that later today. But I'm very excited.
See, I actually thought season 1 of Stranger Things was really good, and then season 2 was where it dipped for me. I never watched season 3, but I probably should get back on that. But like season 1 was like, I binged that all like in a day. Like it was really good. Season 2 is where it fell off, but I'll probably get back on that maybe.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I heard the same thing. I watched season 1, loved it. I think everyone is a huge phenomenon. Yeah. And then season 2 came out. I'm like, okay, it's kind of the same thing. And then so I just figured, but then again, I heard season 3 is amazing. So yeah. I'll have to get back on that to get back on the 4th season.
Right.
I still got to finish Severance. I got to finish Better Call Saul. I got to finish Barry. Got a lot of stuff to go through.
Yeah. If anyone has watched the mid-season finale of Better Call Saul's final season, that is absolutely insane. So I implore anyone to go watch it.
Yeah, Tyler, I know Alex isn't into this stuff, but have you watched the Obi-Wan show yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
I saw the one clip from the Obi-Wan show where the camera is shaky and they do a lightsaber fight. That's all I saw from it. In like one of the opening scenes or something. That's all I saw.
Whenever Hayden shows up, I'm cool with it.
Well, you'll have to let me know what happens, but Stranger Things would definitely recommend getting back to it.
Mm-hmm.
What's The Boys? I've seen some people talk about that on Twitter.
Oh, it's so good. That's the Amazon one with the fake superheroes or something like that.
Yeah. I know. I always forget his name in real life, but he plays Gus in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He's in that.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, Giancarlo Esposito.
Thank you. Isn't that funny how we always associate actors with like one role and then that's who they are forever?
Yeah. I feel like he's been in a lot of things recently, though. He was in Star Wars. He was in the Far Cry video game. He's been in like a lot. Yeah.
I think he actually produces some of the Marvel stuff, too.
Oh,
really? Oh, wait. No, I know who you're talking about. That's like, frick, who is it? It's not him, but it's a very similar name. I know what you mean, though. Yeah, I forget. Yeah, The Boys is awesome. It's a rated R, raunchy, violent superhero show. It's Janae and I love it. We love that show. Same with Barry, which is amazing.
Where do I watch The Boys at?
Amazon.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the one? What's that guy's name? Carl Urban, I think his name.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
He's in that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say about Giancarlo Esposito really quick is that in watching Better Call Saul, it's you do have to suspend a little bit disbelief about it being a prequel and be like, oh, Bob Odenkirk looks like 10 years older than this than he did in Breaking Bad. Same with Jonathan Banks, Mike from Breaking Bad looks like, yeah. Oh God, he looks so old. But Giancarlo Esposito looks exactly the same.
Yeah. Love that guy. Interesting question from Steven. I always love jersey questions. If you could assign our alternate jerseys to specific games this season, which games would you guys choose? I want to see the Navy in prime time. So I want to see them go Navy with, you know, against the Broncos or against the Rams maybe. But I think we need more Navy in our lives, and I want to see it on a primetime game.
I remember being so hyped in 2020 because they were going to wear the Navy jerseys to Buffalo. And I was like, yeah, Tyrod Taylor revenge game. let me check
that. That was the game where Michael Davis clamped Stephon Diggs, though. That was the only good thing from that game.
That was also the game where they called a quarterback sneak on fourth and one from the 2 yard.
Was that the Joshua Kelly jet sweep game also?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It was.
Oh, that's stinky.
Man, we gotta get some better juju around the Navy jerseys. The past years have not been great performances.
What were the other 2 years? Two games.
Last year was the Patriots game.
Oh, jeez.
Which it wasn't a terrible game by any means, but it was definitely a letdown. Do they do two Navy games?
I think they did two. I just can't think of who the other one was. Was it like Giants or something weird?
They did one color and one.
I think
color
Giants rush and one was Navy. Royal Blue.
Giants was color rush. Patriots was Navy.
Okay.
And then other than that, it was just all whites, white or blue with different combos of pants.
Yeah. Now they've leaned into the white and powder blue, which I can't fault them. I think the all white looks amazing. But I need more Navy in my life. I think having seen all of the new combinations in person, I think the Navy is my favorite one.
I'd love to see color rush like week 2 Thursday Night Football against like the Chiefs or something. I think that'd be a fun one. Other than that, I don't have too many jersey opinions. Wear them when they wear them.
Yeah. Give me like mid 2000s sort of Chargers jerseys for one game. Give me like the old LaDainian Tomlinsons or something.
Oh yeah.
Not that they're called that, but you know, like just that particular, not late 2000s, but like that nice dark color.
I think starting next year they can match the, helmets too. So that'll be fun to have. You know, I don't think that they would do a powder blue helmet, but, you know, getting like a Navy helmet for that one game or a powder or a Royal
Color Rush
helmet. Royal Color Rush for that one game. Is the Color Rush your favorite, Alex?
Of the alternates, yeah. I like Color Rush better than the Navy. I don't want to poo-poo on the Navy, but
you like the old Navies.
I do. I like the old navies where, it kind of had the white lines on it. I like that one a little bit more. I don't know. Something always bothered me about the bolt being translucent as well. And I know that's supposed to be minimalist and sleek, but I do kind of like the old ones better. I don't know what people think about that, but I do still like them, but I am higher on the color rushes.
Where are you ranking all yellow, Alex?
Fucking garbage tier. I remember I saw Stephen at the draft wearing the yellow 33 that I choked my like 3-game lead to him in week 18, and I was like, can't believe I let this happen.
Everybody at the draft and everybody in the comments loves the yellow. So
the yellow jersey sucks. I'm sorry. No, yellow cannot be a primary color for a jersey under any
as a primary color, absolutely. No. If you do all yellow, Like Oregon will wear an all yellow from time to time, and it just looks absolutely hideous. But
like,
I think the Chargers yellow. I think as a fan, just wearing like a yellow jersey looks good.
Yeah, like it's not terrible as a fan. I just personally wouldn't wear a yellow jersey. And if they ever try to make that an alternate that they wear on the field, I will rail against it. But we'll see.
I think if you put it with like white pants and the white helmet, I think it wouldn't look too bad. But yeah, if you do yellow jersey, yellow pants, it would look absolutely awful.
Yeah.
Someone's saying
yellow jersey, yellow pants what the Rams did in like 2016 for their color rush when they
were it was their
like
color rush. Yeah.
Oh god.
Someone says we missed a super chat. We technically already talked about this. To be cut or trade Tillery seems like the odd man out. We did already talk about this. I think he's neither cut nor traded.
Yeah. I was just about to point this out, so appreciate you pulling it up, Tyler. But he's going to be on the roster. Ideally, he's not a starter.
Yeah.
Egregious Monk, right above Theory, asked a question about potentially trading for Marquez Callaway. Of course, obviously played in the Saints. He's cheap on a rookie deal steal. What would you think about trading a late-round pick or a 2024 pick for somebody like that?
So first of all, I have to look at his history. Does he have any history with Lombardi?
Yeah, he's been in the Saints. He's been on the Saints for like the last 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Wikipedia says,
but he didn't really ever play a ton until this past season.
Mm-hmm.
So before that, it was more Traquan Smith.
He did go to Tennessee, so there's like 42 coaches with a Tennessee connection.
There you go.
I don't think they're going to make those moves. Yeah. What is the Saints? What's their receiving core situation? So it's Olave. It's Callaway. It's the...
I think they re-signed Traquan Smith. Yeah, they re-signed the small guy, Lil Jordan Harris, I want to say his name is. Or Humphrey, maybe.
Lil Jordan Harris.
No, it's actually his name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, actual name is like Lil Jordan.
Oh, jeez.
There's a Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Lil Jordan Humphrey. Okay.
That's not a Saints guy. Wow.
He was on our team.
Yeah, I didn't watch much Saints last year, so
Deontay Harris. I believe that's him. Yeah, holy lord.
The only Saints game I remember from last year was the one where Jameis tore his ACL and they still won, and then the one where Trevor Siemian beat Tom Brady. Was that one of them too? Those are the only two I really remember.
So our lads they signed Jarvis Landry. Forgot about that. So they have Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, and Jarvis as their starting trio. Then they'll have Marquez Callaway and Traquan Smith. Deontay Harris is... I would imagine they keep those six. I mean, maybe you could convince them to trade Marquez Callaway. I'd be fine with it. I don't know if he's necessarily... Right. Then you're getting into the conversation of like, okay, well, do they keep six? Do they keep five? Do they really want another body in that room? You know, I think you'd have to be talking about a deep threat who's better than Jalen Guyton, and I don't know if Marquez Callaway is that.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the thing about them trading receivers, I mean, you're relying a lot on Michael Thomas in that instance, and the guy hasn't played football for a year and a half now. Is that where we're kind of at? Like, so
I don't know. He was on my fantasy team for a while and then didn't play. Then your fantasy team and didn't play.
So, I mean, yeah, I know. I mean, he's been injured. You're relying on a guy who got surgery late. I would not trade Marquez Callaway in the same way that we just talked about, like, not trading Michael Davis because other guys could get injured. Like, I don't think you should, like, purposely remove your depth. Like, to me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If the Chargers would have wanted to go for it, I think they could. Honestly, I think the Chargers are pretty set at receiver at this point. I mean, you have Keenan, Mike, Palmer, Guyton, and obviously DeAndre Carter, and I think they all do something different, right? Like, I don't think Guyton and Callaway would be redundant, but I think in the Chargers' eyes, I don't know if they would want to forfeit a pick to kind of just, like, have another Guyton. Not that Callaway is not necessarily, but, like, I think they're the five guys they have right now are pretty clearly defined in their roles.
Yeah.
Callaway behind Keenan Allen in yards after the catch per reception. So,
oh shit.
That's how good he is at that.
So he's just like Olave. They certainly have a type.
No kidding.
Double Olaves.
All right. Demetrius had kind of a follow-up question here, and I wanted to talk about it. So he asked, how many deep shots should be expected this season from Herbert and our offense? I think it'll certainly go up, but you know, he was on the Ringer podcast with Stephen Ruiz, Kevin Clark, and Benjamin Solak. And if you haven't listened to that interview, I think it is well worth the time. It's my favorite Justin Herbert interview I've heard so far. And they asked him about like his mentality with taking shots deep, and he, you know, paraphrasing, kind of said like, you have to be selective and smart. So I think, you know, Joe Lombardi took a lot of heat last year for the lack, you know, the perceived lack of deep shots. But I think part of that is A, the offensive line not being able to hold up, and B, Justin just kind of being a more calculated risk taker than we all think that he is. And, you know, I think, you know, if you're talking about like comparing him to Josh Allen or Justin Fields or Patrick Mahomes, those guys are all like big game hunters. Like they want to chuck the ball deep as many times as possible. And I just don't think that Justin has that same kind of mentality. So I think there will be more. I think his yards per attempt and all that stuff and ADOT will go up this year. But I'm not expecting like a drastic change to him, you know, just destroying everybody every single week with 60-yard bombs. So I think people kind of need to temper their expectations here. But I do think it will increase next season.
It should. Yeah, I think it'll increase. I mean, the other thing to consider here too is like if your running game is better, which I mean we expect their running game to be better with Eckler and now Isaiah Spiller as RB2, that probably means there's like more second downs you're running on than like being forced to pass, right? So you know, I think that gives them a little bit more versatility there. So if we're just talking about the number of deep shots they take, I think it'll increase, depending on, of course, how healthy the offensive line stays. If it does go south kind of quickly for the offensive line, it could be less, but I don't think it'll be drastically more either.
Yeah, it's so funny to look at the deep passing, that with the difference between last year or the previous year, his rookie year, and this year is 67 deep shots in 2020, 64 deep shots in 2021. Everyone's freaking out about that. Big time throw percentage went from 28.9 to 28.8. Yeah. Real, you know, average depth of target actually went up for Justin Herbert. So it should increase. I just don't know, like, oh, we're going to get back to throwing it deep. It's like, it was kind of the same. It wasn't really all that much different than 2020. Yeah. But this time I think the line's going to hold up, or he'll be more comfortable throwing to Jalen Guyton, who was wide open several times, waving his arm, and they just could not get the ball to him. So hopefully they can do that more this year.
I mean, you're talking about an offense that was top five in the league last year, and that should continue to be the expectation. So I understand deep passes are a lot of fun, and Justin Herbert is fantastic at them, but I think I care much more about the quality of the offense improving. And, you know, can we be more consistent each week? You know, are we going to have games last year where the offense just kind of stinks like they did against the Ravens, or like they did against the Patriots for the first half? Like, that's really what I care more about, is the consistency, as opposed to like, oh, are we getting seven deep shots a game? Like, I'm going to throw a fit if that's not the case. It's like, I just want a consistent unit this year. And I think that, again, you know, talking about the second year in a system, this is where I think that comes into play, where everybody kind of feels comfortable with their assignments, comfortable with the additions and the improvements. And the other thing with like ADOT and things like that is that the Chargers do so many run pass options on a game to game basis that, you know, Justin Herbert is likely never going to lead the league in ADOT because they do, you know, 10 short passing concepts just based off of run calls. So I think that's the other thing to take into consideration here too.
True.
Yeah. And Vitale mentions the drops too. Like, geez, like how much better will it be just because I hope the drops go down? Funny thing though is that the Chargers offense last year averaged more points per drive than the 2006 offense, which everyone assumes is like some peak Chargers offense because, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson, that whole season.
That's a good Char- goal.
Chargers averaged more points per drive this past year in the first year of an offense where everyone wants to fire the coordinator than they did in the 2006 offense or any year of offense that Rivers had after that.
Yeah, and I also think we talked about last show, just Justin Herbert being in this system for another year. I mean, that's probably just going to be lead him to be more equipped to take some of those deep shots as well and feel more comfortable in doing it. So, I don't think it's anything to overreact to.
All right, a couple more questions here. I saw the Utah questions. I saw the Utah slander. I will not stand for this.
Pull up the Utah slander.
Wanted to get to one question first from Envy. Again, he wants to know how confident we are in Ryan Ficken to turn this special teams unit around.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did really good last year with the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, kind of got Kane and Wongwu going there. I mean, turned around their special teams as a whole. I guess the interesting thing is I don't know if they have like a lot they have to turn around, right? They sort of made the marginal improvement last year. I mean, we did get on this show sometimes and we're like, okay, they went from 32nd to 31st and we talked about it like we had won the Super Bowl when it came to special teams rankings.
Yeah,
but you have the kicker there, which I mean is a huge part of it, and having Dustin Hopkins, who's going to be 80% field goal kicker, right? Like the fact that you have that now or more is huge. If you can just get a punter at this point, you're kind of okay, right? And I know they're obviously they moved on from Ty Long. You know, maybe it'll be J.K. Scott. Maybe it'll be someone else. But if you can get a quality punter and the blocking holds up, like, I don't think there's a whole lot you have to do to go from, you know, bottom of the league to top of the league, right? And they're kind of subbing in Andre Roberts for DeAndre Carter, which I think at this point is like more or less the same, with DeAndre Carter having more of a role in the offense. So I'm fine with that. And I'm pretty confident based on what they've assembled so far that so long as the punter situation kind of withstands, then the special teams will be fine.
Yeah, I don't have any concerns right now with Ryan Ficken turning the special teams around. I think Darius Swinton could have turned the special teams around if he just had the same players, made the right decisions at the beginning of the year. Already had Andre Roberts, already had Dustin Hopkins at the beginning of the year. I think they would be like in the 20, like early 20s, I guess. So I think same thing with Ficken. Even if he sucks at his job, I think for the most part, just having the right guys here is going to make the special teams, you know, better. To me, really with Ficken, it's all about the end. It's the back end of the roster decisions. That's more important to me this year, considering what happened last year, than even really just fixing special teams. Like, can you make sure that the right guys stick on the roster rather than make some very fireable decisions, which got Swinton fired in the end?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything we've heard come out about Swinton and that decision to move on from him is that, you know, he did have some say in roster decisions, and Brandon Staley obviously didn't like the way that those things panned out. So, of course, Brandon Staley could have stepped up in those situations. But, you know, Darius Swinton, you're heading into the season and your plan is KJ Hill at punt returner and Larry Roundtree at kick returner. Like, that's also, you know, like, what are you doing?
If Brandon Staley would have listened to the podcast, he would have overruled that decision. But yeah.
Yeah. There we go. All right. Now we'll talk about my University of Utah. Oh, JM God. Said, who wins the Pac-12? The answer is that the University of Utah is going to repeat again. They are completely stacked. They have the best offense they have had in the longest time. Cam Rising is the best quarterback in the conference, not that guy at USC. So the answer here is USC. The answer is not USC. It is not Oregon, who's going through a coaching change. The answer is Utah.
What's the bet here if it's not them?
Can what's I just the bet? The
field, like Utah versus the field here.
I mean, if you want to do that, you can do Utah versus the field.
I don't follow USD enough to even tell you.
What if we make the bet that if Utah doesn't win the Pac-12, Steven has to eat like a large serving of funeral potatoes as he records the show. Like the biggest portion we can find, and he just has to talk through while he's eating. That's the bet. Something like that.
I guess I have to eat a whole pan of funeral potatoes.
And only me and Tyler can tell him if he's allowed to stop or not. But I don't know. I don't have any Pac-12 opinions. I don't stay up for Pac-12 games. So it's too late for my bedtime.
Yeah, the new Pac-12 commissioner is changing that a little bit.
Hope so.
You know, they've got a couple few, you know, mid-afternoon primetime games this year on Fox and things like that. So should be better.
Good luck. I hope Utah wins. I really don't have a horse in this race. I just root for the local team, but go Utah. I hope they win it. It makes you happy.
NSN said Steven has to write a complimentary article about Pipkins and Norton if Utah loses. That's a punishment.
Should the Pro Bowl have a pie eating contest? See, we always end up on food. Should the Pro Bowl have a pie eating contest for O-line and D-linemen?
You know, in terms of the Pro Bowl, I do hope that they get rid of it for the sole fact that would mean that Justin Herbert was the last Pro Bowl MVP.
That's a Jeopardy question. I also like how he spelled it Pro Bowl, which is what the Pro Bowl has been recently.
Eating contest, it will be Pro Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. Just have fun with it. Do what the dunk contest has sucked in the NBA recently, but do like the whatever the football equivalent of like the 3-point contest and all that stuff would be. I feel like that'd be fun. Maybe show the kickers some love. You can have Dustin Hopkins and all those guys have like a field goal kicking contest. I'm just trying to think of things. Maybe wide receiver jump ball competition. I don't know. The thing with the Pro Bowl and like the reason they had to cancel it is like no one wants to play that game at the end of the season. Like the All-Star game and all the All-Star games are like mid-season. So I don't know. Just have fun with it. Go crazy. Then they just make a dodgeball. Just make all these guys playing dodgeball the new Pro Bowl like they've been doing. Like, I don't know. Yeah, but the Pro Bowl had to go.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to ask them to play a football game, like, I mean, the Chargers players that they had to wait like a whole month to play that Pro Bowl game after the season ended. So people just don't want to do that anymore. Yeah. I think if you're going to change it and do things like this, you know, make it happen. You know, the Saturday right after the season, you do some like 7-on-7 stuff and you can have the linemen play receivers and do some things like that. Lindsay Jones did mention for The Athletic, she mentioned in her article about it, she thought doing like having the kickers play horse, you know, have like specific targets up in the field goal range and like have them play horse as kickers would be a fun thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you don't really get to see much of any of the kickers in the Pro Bowl, which is, you know, good or bad depending on who you are. And like this year the punter like literally never went on the field and like he was mic'd up for it, and I want to say it was the Raiders punter. But just make it more of a competition in certain ways, I guess, would be more fun. But the game itself is not going to be entertaining anytime soon.
Just have the Pro Bowl nominees play basketball instead. Like do something to break out of the rotation because they don't want to play football. It's too physical. No one cares. At the end of the year, just let them have fun. Just let them do something they like.
Yeah.
Give me. Yeah. Someone says Young Hui Koo would do backflip kicks for horse. I endorse that. Flag football. No, maybe. I want to see like paintball or something like unrelated, but it's still a team sport. Just have like paintball. And have like Donald Parham, like everything be like 6'2" for coverage, and he just has to try to duck behind things that are way too short for him.
Just have like Justin Herbert play Tom Brady in chess or something. I don't know. Just do something.
Yeah. I mean, they do a little bit of a quarterback competition with like the moving targets and things like that. But I remember like back in the old days in Hawaii, they have like legitimate competitions. Oh, yeah. You know, there's that thing that the Chargers used to always do with the Saints when they would do joint practices where they would have like a very specific drill, like just get that drill with all the quarterbacks. I think that'd be more entertaining than what they do now with it. Yeah. Someone said ping pong and I said ping pong. That'd be funny. Justin Herbert said on the Ringer podcast that him and all his teammates are starting to play pickleball. Have you guys played pickleball before?
Is pickleball the one? Is pickleball the one where you hit the ball against the wall?
No. That's
which one's that?
I can't remember what that's called right now. With like
the talking about handball
inside.
No, the one where you have it's like the sport the old guys play where they like they have the paddle and they hit the ball. I know against what you mean. Wall. I don't know
inside,
what that's called.
Right?
I've literally done this before. I can't even think of what I'm.
I don't know what that's called. So let us know in the chat. I don't know what it's called either. Like, what is pickleball though?
So pickleball is basically mini tennis. It's like squash is squash the one you're looking for? Racquetball. Racquetball.
That was racquetball.
That's the one.
Racquetball.
But pickleball is basically mini tennis. Like it's at an actual tennis court and you're just doing mini tennis. So it's not as hard to like hit the ball over the net consistently. You don't have to cover as much ground. And Justin Herbert was saying that he and all of his teammates are starting to play pickleball too. And I'm like, that's kind of unfair because Justin Herbert is 6'7" and has crazy long arms. Like he doesn't have to move at all to play that sport.
I like how the solution to the Pro Bowl is play anything other than football. That's really the solution that we're going for here. And yeah, I mean, I do think that's actually the right decision.
Yeah, much better for your knees. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we were here for, you know, an hour and 8 minutes. Appreciate all the good questions. Somehow we always end up on stuff like this. So really appreciate it. Alex, any final thoughts before you head into those finals next week?
I have no thoughts. My brain is dead.
Tyler, hope you have a really good vacation, man. Enjoy Hawaii. You and Janae deserve a wonderful vacation. So any final thoughts, dude?
No, I'm getting out of here. See you guys. Enjoy your week. I will have a couple videos up just because, but otherwise I will be gone in Hawaii if I don't come back because I liked it so much. I decided not to return.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously we are not doing an episode tomorrow or Monday because of the holiday. I will have an episode at some point, probably with Kyle or Arjun or both or Maddie. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Somebody else will be here with me. And then we'll be back, the three of us, for the week after that for normal episodes, and then we'll be having a little bit of a break in general. So lots of fun stuff in terms of non-football things coming up for each of us. Alex will be back in the States soon enough as he gets back on his summer vacation. So really looking forward to that. As always, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you later.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.